It's Tuesday, September 18th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Everyone, got a great show for you tonight. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume, because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. My name is Todd Cochran, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island here in Honolulu, Hawaii. How are you? I tell you, it's been a terrific day here, been a very, very productive one. And I've got a long list of stuff I've got to get done this week, but I got a great show lined up for you tonight, of course. And for those of you that are checking out the show for the very first time, make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, subscribe to our podcast newsletter. You'll find a link to it on the website. And check out all of our archive podcasts as well. And when you subscribe to the newsletter, that gets you the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. So we have all the links to all the content that we talk about during the podcast. For those of you that are long-term subscribers of the show, hey, thanks for being part of the Ohana, being part of the family here. And wow, what an interesting last 7 or 8 days it's been. I tell you, I've this morning we loaded up and I had to take care of some catering issues for my retirement ceremony. I went over and took care of a couple things, went over to my work and saw some people over there, and or at least my old work, I guess I should say, and had a couple of little issues. One of the guys that's going to be in my ceremony, he is have to go out on town on business, so I'm kind of scrambling to find a replacement for him, but overall, pretty easy going here. I had to, my wife was complaining at me the other night. She says, you know, I can't get into your office. You've got boxes stacked everywhere. And what are you going to do about that? Well, today she took my daughter to an audition. And while she was gone, I was getting the boxes finished up, packed up, and I moved them down into the living room. And she came home and she goes, I didn't mean for you to move them from the from your office to the living room. I said, no, baby, I'm just staging them here, and I'm going to get the labels on them. I'm going to take them to the garage. I promise I'll have them out in the garage tomorrow morning. And I got that look, you know, that kind of that sideways look. And I said, I'll label them in the garage. I'll move them out there tonight. So the office is relatively clear. I was able to pull all of the recording gear out and all of the wireless stuff, got that all hooked up, did a sound check, got everything squared away, did some testing to make sure that we're going to be good for the podcast awards a week from Friday. And I've gotten some emails from some of you that have volunteered to help out, or actually, you know, said you're available to help out. And I'm going to go ahead and I need to follow up on those emails. So hopefully I get that done tomorrow, and let you know exactly what I need. I do want to put you guys on advance notice here that there may not be a show on Friday. And the reason for that is this. I've got an event that happens once a year, and it's going to be going on Thursday night through Friday morning, and it's something that I don't miss. It'll actually be the last event that I participate in, and so some of you probably that are in the Navy probably have a good idea what's going to be happening on Thursday, so I'll probably be doing that. I may, if I have time, Thursday morning, I may put the show together Thursday morning and put it up for like a Thursday night release or something, so, but no promises here. We've got a lot of things cooking. But you can, I can make it up to you here, by y'all can attend the roundtable that we're going to have this coming Saturday at 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern. I think it's, or excuse me, let me look at the time and make sure I just gave you the right time. It may be 1:30. Gosh, I'll give you a bum gouge here. I have to actually load the website up. Brain is not firing on all cylinders tonight. Now let me scroll down here and actually look. We need to get the announcement up in the system. But, yeah, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. So hope you'll attend that. Of course, that's going to be an event that's sponsored by GoToMeeting. And you'll be able to check out how we do all of our, you know, presentations and hand stuff back and forth and how it's really, it's an actually very cool interactive event. Of course, these days, whether you're in business or simply want to share something with friends or family, email and voicemail sometimes just isn't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, a web conferencing solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with your business associates, family, and friends. The ability to host online meetings is an absolute must for today's business. Try it yourself for free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. And I know Annie McCaskey has a special guest lined up. And I don't know what the subject is yet, but I know he's been working it for a while, so I got to get that from him. And hopefully I'll have that data to put out. And if you are, we have a newsletter as well that we send out on that event, available at techpodcast.com. So we will we'll get that information up online and, of course, sent out to all those people that are subscribed to that particular newsletter. Well, I tell you, this weekend we had a whole bunch of stuff going on with Raw Voice. People have been burning the midnight oil. We released our new pre-advertising qualification survey system tied into our statistics system, which has all been released. So everyone that's on both the Tech Podcast Network, the Blueberry community, and over at Podcaster News now have access to our new stats system. And we're pretty excited about that. A whole bunch of people jumped on immediately as I went into the admin tonight to look at how many new shows were already using the stats system. I think I saw nearly 200 new shows that were using it. So hopefully we'll start getting some feedback from people on that. What else have I got in my list? Oh, a little update on the iPhone. Well, if you've been following the blog at Geek News Central, you'll notice that I put up a post today, and actually I should actually load the post up. I should actually read a little bit of this to you and give you some idea what I have found out. I did a comparison of T-Mobile on the Edge network and as compared to AT&T. I had a buddy that was over at the house, and he has an AT&T enabled iPhone. So we were up here in the office for a while today, and he loaded up. We actually did it two or three times to get a good sampling. But he loaded my website on the AT&T Edge network within the iPhone, and it took about 31 seconds to load my website. And then when I took and loaded, when I loaded my website on the T-Mobile enabled iPhone, it took about 43 seconds to load. So definitely AT&T is a little bit faster, but as compared to my Sprint EVDO Rev A card or Sprint EVDO service here, I loaded that up with my laptop, and that took about 6 seconds to load. So it is pretty amazing the differential in speed. And I'm just kind of curious what kind of throughput other of you are getting on AT&T, and if anyone's even a T-Mobile Edge user or not. But if you make the switch and put T-Mobile on your iPhone, the APN for T-Mobile is internet2.voicestream.com. You'll need to enter that on the iPhone to be able to actually get onto the Edge network if you have that service. I think it's $14 or $19 a month extra. But, I'm sitting here and I'm actually, I guess, how should I say it? I'm semi-impressed with this phone. Now, you know, don't get me wrong here. I have never used I've never had a BlackBerry. I've never really used a Palm. I've never had a phone that had all the features beyond maybe SMS and a little rinky-dink calendar system. So, as compared to other phones that I've had in the past. This is pretty impressive. Now, I know some of you've got phones with Windows Mobile on it, and you're probably pretty happy with that operating system. But just the ease of use has been significant. My son was up here, and he wanted to look at it, so I had him, I went ahead and let him play around with it. Now, we're talking about the three-year-old, and it wasn't 30 seconds, and he'd figured out how to take a picture with a camera. So, if a three-year-old can use it, anyone can use it. So it's definitely an easy phone to use. Was a little bit sad because it did not recognize the contacts that was on my SIM card, and I had to go through and kind of do some messing around to get the contacts on there. And it didn't take too long, but it was kind of aggravating that they weren't picked up automatically. But anyway, T-Mobile works just fine on the iPhone. And I did have, took me probably about 45 minutes or so to get the phone actually unlocked. And I'm pretty much a geek guy, but I did have a little bit of challenge. And the site that gave me some instructions, one of their applications did not work real well. And I did some more searches and found a different application that worked a lot, lot better. I should document that a lot and put it up on the website on the process I went through. But I actually used my Mac to unlock the phone. It seemed to be a lot easier than actually using a PC for some reason. A lot of reboots to the phone. I know that. Lots and lots of reboots. And but it was a lot of fun, and we'll see how this goes. We'll see if it ends up being locked down at some point in the future if Apple comes out and closes it up. For those of you that have sent me an email scolding me for not going to the doctor, I have an appointment. I will be going tomorrow morning and finding out what's going on with me. I finally figured out, I better find out why I'm still semi-sick, but I'm hearing from a lot of people that this cold, this upper respiratory thing's been hanging on to some people for like 2 weeks. And I felt pretty good. It gets bad in the evening, but the last 2 days I've actually felt, cough-wise, haven't coughed too much. But I think you've noticed it probably early in the show. I feel like I got a little bit of a frog in my throat. But hey, I wanted to let you know that I've been playing around on GoDaddy's domain auction site, and really have gotten lucky over there and picked up some good domains recently. So if you are shopping for a domain or have a domain name that you're looking for, or a, maybe an alternative type, you definitely want to go and look at the GoDaddy auctions, because boy, I've been real lucky and picked up some cool ones. You know, with domain names at GoDaddy.com are up to 70% less than the competition. Plus, each domain includes free hosting with a website builder, a free blog, complete email, and much, much more. Podcast hosting over there, they've got those type of accounts. They've got normal Nevers blog at Geek News Central to find some additional codes there as well. Thanks, GoDaddy, for being a continued sponsor here. And thanks to all of you for continuing to support this show by picking up domains and different products over there. So, Thanks again to GoDaddy. All right, what else have I got? I've got a stack of stuff here for you today. And I'll make sure that I've got everything in my list covered. I do. And again, I hope everyone joins us on Saturday for the roundtable. Should be a great event. They always are. And they're well followed afterwards. And if you don't make it to the live event, you'll be able to see it online or download it to your website or onto your media player. Or actually, into your desktop or your media player. Google's announced today that they have launched their new feature called Presentation. And this has been coming for a while. We knew in April that they were thinking about or were in works of getting the presentation portion of Google Docs launched. And they've announced it today that it's available. You can try it at documents.google.com. And it's kind of like a slideshow type of thing, almost like PowerPoint. It looks very, very easy to use. I was playing around with it for a little while, and you'll be able to pull spreadsheet data in. You'll be able to put Word docs in. You can do images into it. Very, very cool. And it definitely will make it easy to do some integrated type of presentations online. And you can share the docs, which is another nice feature. You don't have to send someone a PowerPoint, but I'm sure this is going to get some big press in the next day or so. I think there's actually being a demo of it tomorrow. So I don't know if they release this on in advance because the TechCrunch 40 conference is going on, or if that was actually announced this afternoon. I saw a bunch of stuff on the TechCrunch 40 presentations that were going on, but I didn't follow it too close because I was pretty busy around here. But anyway, you can check that out at You can check that out at documents.google.com. Over the years, from time to time, I have used a anonymizing proxy service, and I've only used it a couple of times. And I know some people really use them a lot. But it turns out that some of these folks that are running these proxy services are starting to get hauled into jail because people that are doing bad things are doing it through the proxy. And yet, you know, it goes and registers that IP to that machine within whatever website's access, whether it be a hacker, someone doing stuff with child pornography, whether it be all kinds of different things that people are doing that are causing these proxy server people to get in trouble. And there's one guy that runs a Tor node, and I'm not familiar with this particular system, but a Tor node operator has said, hey, I'm shutting mine down. I can't do this anymore, because he's been hauled into the police station twice and interrogated. Luckily, he's been released twice. But he says it's not worth it no more. And I would think so, you're trying to provide a good proxy service for people to use. And then something like that happened, you're going to, possibly do jail time because of someone else's surfing habits. Wow. Pretty crazy. Yeah. All right. The Register is reporting, and this is not going to affect anyone in the United States. I think it's only folks that are in... Yeah, been sold in Danish and German branches of a retail giant called Aldi, A-L-D-I. Some Vista Home premium computers that are being sold have been found to have a 13-year-old boot sector virus embedded in them. It appears that the antivirus software that was loaded on the Vista machines by these retailers did not contain the signature file for this old virus. So people got the machines, loaded them up, probably replaced it with a different type of, put a different type of antivirus application on there, and boom, all of a sudden it shows up the machine's got a virus. Now, while the virus is not too critical and it's pretty old school, what they're saying is there's upwards of 100,000 computers have been shipped with that boot sector virus on there. It can be cleaned up with modern-day antivirus tools. But, it makes me wonder how many more viruses that have been dormant for, like this one, a 13-year-old virus, how many of these signature files have been removed by the antivirus people? Could we end up with viruses on our machines just because people are recycling these old viruses and sending them out, and yet, they're not being detected because the antivirus machines, the software doesn't have the signature file? Pretty scary stuff here, but the link to this is available up in the show notes today, and a good report from register.com. Good article overall, and I've seen a couple of these over the last couple of weeks talking about a lot of people switching to the Mac, and the latest article is one by Mark Cuban, who's talking about how he's been a big PC user for a long, long time, but just recently made the switch to a Mac, and he goes through his process, and he's running into some of the same stuff I'm seeing, and I'm not even up on Vista, where he upgraded to Outlook 2007, and his machine has just been brought to a halt. And I'm just, I'm surprised. I know I did get some email. I got an email from one of the listeners on the show that is a Microsoft employee, and he gave me a link to a fix that was being recommended, and I applied that to Outlook, and it had absolutely no effect. It didn't change the performance. So what Mark Cuban's done is he's talking about his switch over to a Mac. I don't know if he's got a notebook or what type he's got, but he's also is, you know, some of the things that the Mac can't do for him, and one of the reasons why he's still running a PC for some specific applications. But it's a good article, and I think it's just a growing trend that Microsoft's got a real problem on their hands, and you know, they're starting to gain in popularity of machines being trouble-free. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I haven't had really any problems with my PC or my Mac, with the exception of Outlook 2007 being an absolute pig. But I'm glad to see I'm not the only one with the issue, and I think Microsoft's going to have to do something about this. Enough people are complaining about it, and I'm seeing more posts every day on the issue. All right, moving on here to a little bit different topic. Doug Kay announced that for those of you that are new media creators, that that the Levelator, which is a great application that runs both on OS X and Windows, with a Linux version soon to follow, is going to a new website. It's going to be over on the Conversation Network at conversationnetwork.org. They're going to move it over there, and they've got some more bug fixes coming. But if you haven't played around with the Levelator, it's a very, very cool tool, especially if you are recording with a little bit lower-end recording application. The recording application I use is Adobe Audition, and it has everything that I need to level. And as Paul says, is to RMS level the soundtrack. But the Levelator does that and more. And I had mixed results with it, but I'm sure a lot of people swear by it and use it. So definitely check out the Levelator if you're creating a lot of audio, and check out, it's a very, very cool tool. All right, this next product is definitely, this actually product improvement. All I can say is it's going to be a home run if they really come through on this. But it appears that Coca-Cola is getting ready to introduce self-chilling soft drinks. How many times have you went someplace and, you know, maybe your cooler has got one of those ice packs in, and you pull your soda out and it's like lukewarm? You know, it's nothing worse than a warm soda. Really, it's really nasty. And I don't like drinking warm soda. But, you know, if they're going to come out with this, with these bottles that when you crack the top, they'll automatically cool. And This is awesome. I don't know how they're going to do this. I'm going to have to definitely read up on what they're on how they're actually doing this chemically. But it appears that there's a mechanism inside that creates ice made from the drink, so it's not diluted. Now, this is over the top. It really, really is. But, you know, there's nothing better than an ice cold soda on a hot day. And while they're saying there is going to be some sort of heat index restrictions for this in order for it to work, they're going to be introducing this in the UK, and I'm sure it's going to be a hit. I'm sure it's going to cost more, too, but, you know, nothing like throwing a couple of sodas in the car and not worrying about having a cooler, and you pop the top, and they're instantly cold. Talk about camping. Oh, my goodness. Huge, huge, huge. So we'll see what happens here. And if they're able to make these super cold, and, you know, I can think of another beverage that would work real well with this technology as well. But if it works good in the UK, they're going to introduce it into the United States. I'm sure there's going to be some close look at this and how they're actually accomplishing it. But good on Coke to introduce this. It's pretty innovative, and I'm excited to see it. Any of you in the UK, get your hands on one of these. I want to know about it. Now, it says that it's going to be called, now what they're going to introduce it first is in Sprite, and reportedly the beverage is going to be called Sprite Super Chilled. Okay, I don't know if that's the actual name or not, but okay, we'll see what happens. But of course, the first thing will happen, someone will say, you know, it causes cancer or something, and that will stop the innovation on this. All right, over at MacRumors.com, and of course, if you have if you run iTunes today, you'll have noticed that iTunes version 7.4.2 is made available for both the Mac and Windows. And what's new in the version is it addresses an issue with creating ringtones using iTunes Plus through song purchases and include bug fixes to improve stability and performance. Apparently, there's, for those of you that are either running iToner or iPhone Ringtone Maker for the PC, those still work. And it appears that other custom ringtones appear to have been removed via Make iPhone Ringtone and cannot be created using proper tag change techniques previously described. So it looks like they're trying to close the hole. You know, this ringtone business is huge. You know, $2-3 for one of those. You know, they make a lot of money. That's almost pure profit, you know. So they definitely don't want people creating their own ringtones for either for the iPhone and or any other device. So we'll see what happens here. I'm sure that those that are in that business of bypassing that are going to be working on the workarounds real quick. It doesn't appear that anything else was updated with 7.4.2, but we'll see. And I think that's just a, you know, an aggressive thing by Apple to, you know, shut down those free ringtone makers. You know, I knew about this, but I don't think that I have ever done one. And it's something that I actually think I'm going to do. How many of you have got a mirror of your Mac bootable drive? Have you made a mirror to a bootable external drive? I was looking through a step-by-step instruction on how to do that today. And if you haven't created a backup this way or make a bootable clone, external drive bootable clone, it might be a good advice to you because hard drives in all computers die at some point. And this can be a great way to make sure that you have a clone of the drive that's in there. Now, that's not going to save any of the new data you put on there, but I'm sure if I dig into this a little deeper, there's going to be ways to keep that clone up to date. I would hope, anyway, that it would be easy enough to do. So those of you that are Mac gurus out there, maybe you can point me in the right direction. All right, next article up is one from performancing.com. It's 27 tips for building a better blog, and that's not the actual title of the article, but I had to keep the show child safe here. So they've got 27 great topics of in you know, 27 strategies you can use to make your blog better. So I think it's a pretty good rundown of things, and I'm going to look through this and see what I can employ over at Geek News Central. And if you get any tips and if you use anything out of this list that helps you out, let me know about it. Definitely send your feedback to geeknews@gmail.com. And if you've got something that's not in this list that you've done to improve your blog and make its, you know, its uptake better, definitely let me know about it. Appreciate it. Share with the audience. I'm sure we could all, within the family here, use any advice that you may have one way or the other. Over on Wired, they've got a article about Comcast. Those of you that are Comcast customers, you probably are aware that Comcast has been essentially smacking down some users that have been using too much bandwidth. And there are some new indications out through some announcements that they've made that it appears that Comcast customers are limited to 90 gigabytes per month of traffic. Now, 90 gigs, that's, you know, that really is not very much if you think about it. 90 gigs. 90 gigabytes per month. Now, that I'm thinking about that number, and you know, you think of a CD. CD. Well, how many CDs is that? That's quite. That actually is quite a bit, isn't it? Because I get to thinking about my web hosting accounts where we have 500 gigs per month, and we actually have some of our machines that are is set up to about 2 terabytes a month because of the traffic that's moving through them. But I guess 90 gigs is quite a bit of traffic that one could use. That's the equivalent of, what, 100, 150 CDs That's, yeah, I guess it's quite a bit. They're saying that any customer who downloads the equivalent of 30,000 songs, 250,000 pictures, or 13 million emails in a month would probably be defined as an excessive use customer. So they didn't give an exact amount, but they did give that type of a scenario. So I just wonder, for those people that have been defined as an excessive user, if they were actually using 90 gigs a month. I sure would like to see how much I use a month. That would be kind of cool, wouldn't it, to be able to track. How many of you have got some sort of a software product on your PCs that actually track how much actual in and out bandwidth you use over your internet connection each month? Does anybody actually measure that? Does anybody actually have a tool that they use? Love to hear if you do. geeknews@gmail.com for your comments. All right, it appears that Winamp, you know, Winamp's a diehard. I use Winamp here to play the intro to the show. I play all of the audio comments on it. It's just it's a great little nice audio player that has been around forever. Well, it appears that Winamp is going to be turning 10 on October 10th. And so thus, on October 10th at 10:10 a.m., Winamp 5.5, PC only, is going to be released sporting two new and potentially controversial features supporting for MP3 blogs and the ability to stream your music collection over the internet. I don't know why it would be controversial to support blogs that have audio files on it. Now, like this site, we've got MP3s on the site, so I guess we could be considered an MP3 blog. So if you're using the Winamp browser, and this is kind of similar to another product that's out there, and I'm trying to think of the name of it right now, but if you surf onto that, basically it's an all-in-one application. You can watch videos on it, and you can do music, and when you're surfing the internet and you go to a website that has media, the media list gets preloaded into the bottom of it. Winamp's going to be doing something similar there. They're also going to be making a feature available that's called Winamp Remote, and I'm sure this is where probably the controversy comes in, and it's going to act like a local media server, cataloging your tracks and videos, and then enabling you to access them from another device, including other PCs running Winamp or via a web browser through various mobile devices and game consoles. But the kicker here is it's saying, unlike iTunes sharing, it isn't restricted to devices on the local network, and instead you can also share music over the internet. So this could be where we could run into some problems. But you know what? If I have a Winamp player loaded with all of the podcasts and the new media and unrestricted stuff that that I listen to, then it would be kind of cool to be able to share some of that and with other Winamp users. Definitely, it uses your bandwidth to get the media transferred, I guess. That's at least what I'm assuming, or you can stream it. So maybe you aren't actually transferring it, but it's definitely another way to get media distributed. So we'll see what happens with Winamp, but turning 10 here shortly, and I'm sure if you're a PC user, you probably are very, very familiar with Winamp. I almost forgot to mention, and the reason it kind of provoked me here is I saw an article on EFF talking about EFF seeking a staff intellectual property attorney. So if you are a listener of the show and you are a intellectual property attorney, the EFF is looking to hire you. Well, at the same time, though, here at Raw Voice, we are now in the search for a system administrator. Our current system administrator has moved on to bigger and better things. So we're looking for a new system administrator at Raw Voice. And if you have system administrator experience, primarily CentOS and Fedora Core, definitely send me an email. You can send it to the normal one at geeknews@gmail.com. And we're looking to bring someone on a part-time basis. So this would be a paid position with the possibility of being able to come on the team full-time with possibly an equity stake as well, as long as certain criteria are met. But we're looking for highly motivated individuals that want to work with the startup. So if you, again, have CentOS or Fedora Core Linux experience, and experience with MySQL, setting up boxes, doing load sharing, different types of things. Definitely want to talk to you. Drop me a line and get you hooked up with Angelo, and we'll talk about the terms of what our offer is. So should talk about that earlier in the show, but wanted to put that out here. All right, with Apple's new iTunes that was released and the new iPods, they made some changes, and I think we talked a little bit about it on the last show, that essentially blocked third-party applications from looking at the playlist. So Linux users were essentially locked out of iTunes and, you know, being able to get access to the database. I don't know exactly how that works because you're not actually running iTunes in Linux. But never fear, it looks like the hacker community has been able to crack the new checksum by a group called GTK Pod Coders. So I'm reading down here a little further, and there was a quote by Cory Doctorow over at Boing Boing, who weighed in on the debate and provides a good rebuttal here. He says, and of course, this the reason that Apple did this is they said that they were doing checksumming. But Cory goes on to say, checksumming is not just being used to verify data integrity. If that were all, then the iPod wouldn't report zero tracks if the checksum failed to match. The sum could be calculated using an easily derived salt. In this case, the checksum is being calculated by using a secret shared between the device and iTunes in order to prevent clients that don't share that secret from loading music onto the iPod. Oh, so this is so that those that are using Linux are able to access the iPod to get music on board the device using their own application. So what they've done here is they've cracked that code, and there is some concern here that Apple may be ratcheting up the attempt to thwart those third-party apps from accessing the iPod. So only time will tell, but they're saying that it's a very good possibility that Apple could close the door on this at some point in the future, but at recent, at least the you know, the issue is has been overcome through the cracking of the checksum. Some of the people that are getting the iPod Touch are complaining of LCD deficiencies. And there was an engineer that weighed in on the Apple.com website saying that essentially it appears that the manufacturer may have not put on this anti-reflective coating on the glass. And he's speculating that the iPod Touch was supposed to be available during the announcement. And I'm sure he's feeling, of course, that probably they've been under intense pressure to get them released. After all, you know, Jobs didn't say, they said they were going to be available at the end of the month, and all of a sudden they're in stores a week later, while those of us that ordered our iPod Touch haven't got them yet. So what's apparently happened here is that these LCDs, and maybe the manufacturer was under such pressure that they forgot to put this AR coating on. So it's going to cause some issue of some people that have the iPod Touch and getting a LCD that doesn't, you know, has they're seeing a reflection on the screen. So if you get an iPod Touch and that's your, you know, that's what's happened to yours, I would I'd take it in to Apple and demand a replacement and to make sure you get one that doesn't have the same issue here. But we'll see what how this develops and how many people are affected by it. I know I'm going to be looking at mine real, real close. And if it's not right, I'm just going to take it back and return it and wait till they get it fixed. So I'll link up to this thread. And if any of you have an iPod Touch and you've seen any of this already, you know, let me know for sure via the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365 or at geeknews@gmail.com. All right, you know, every once in a while I stumble upon a new website, and I stumbled on one today that, as I was reading through their website, they've got some pretty good stuff here. It's called SEO, Search Engine Optimization, so SEOposition.com, which is a great domain name, by the way. But they got an article up that piqued my interest called The Top 15 Free Search Engine Optimization Tools. And it goes through a lot of tools I was never, ever familiar with. Some of them I'm very familiar with. But if you're looking to make sure that your website is, got all the, all the bells and whistles have been tweaked, this is a great list of tools that you can use to check your website out to make sure that you're not being penalized PageRank-wise because of, bad code in your website or dead links. And to be honest with you, with the 7,000-some articles that have been written on Geek News Central, I probably need to go through and make sure that, because I'm sure over the past 5 years, there's probably been articles that have, that don't link up no longer, and I probably should go through and remove those. But anyway, this is available in the show notes. Check it out, and let us know if you get any use out of those as well. All right, Engadget is reporting that Microsoft is adding Slingbox-like capability to its Media Center PCs. And I said, whoa, really, really cool. I've always been interested in the Slingbox. Never really wanted to order one. And I'm sure this is, Microsoft going head-to-head with Slingbox. And I'm sure if they're just going to build it in software, it's not going to be an issue. But using the new acquired but not new web guide component, you can now tune into Media Center content from any place you have web access. So I'm really wondering here how they're going to, really deal with the internet service providers. I'm sure they're not going to be happy about people remotely accessing PCs and allowing them to stream video off there. But this new capability goes beyond what is the Slingbox is capable of, giving you full control of your system remotely. And it allows you to set record times, change schedules, and it's even got some features for those of you that are on mobile phones or Wi-Fi equipped PDAs. You can use it through those as well. So very, very cool. We'll see what happens with this, and I'm definitely going to be checking out. I've got two machines that are web Media Center PCs, and I don't even have the web Media Center PC components I'm hooked up. Part of the reason is because where I've got my computers, there's no TV connection in this room. And the cable, actually there is, but it goes into the cable modem, and I don't want to put a splitter on the box. And I probably need to get up, at some point in the future, I'm going to have to be able to, either break down and buy an Xbox and have, the functionality down on that, on the TV downstairs and have it tied in that way, or, I don't know, have some sort of an extender, I guess. Those of you that are big Media Center users, what are you guys using? You guys got that same problem where your computers are at? There's really no television connection for the Media Center boxes. How are you doing? What are you doing to overcome that? And, heck, I might as well put these things to use. Hopefully, when we get in the new house, I won't have this issue. I'll be able to have enough drops put in where I'm going to put drops in wherever I need them so that one room will have more than one TV connection so I can run these things. But what are y'all doing on that? All right, Sprint has announced AirRave, or AIRAVE, kind of a spin-on word there, but Sprint AirRave is a signal booster that has gone on sale today in Denver, Colorado, and Indianapolis. And this is really, really cool, is what you're able to do if you're a Sprint customer, cell phone customer. You can get one of these boxes, and it's $50 for the box. You're going to have to pay $30 for a family plan or $15 per month for an individual plan. But what it does is it boosts your Sprint signal, and it essentially, when you're home, it allows you to make phones through your mobile phones via the internet through this Sprint AirRave. And very, very cool. It switches the mode of the phone, and actually, it goes to the internet versus actually going over airwaves, normal airwaves, and you get unlimited access when you're at home. So similar to the T-Mobile home Wi-Fi, but very, very cool. They're going to roll this out. They are rolling it out at Denver and Indy, and then Nashville a little later this year, followed nationwide rollout in 2008. What's to stop? Well, I guess maybe they have to have the local phone service prepared for it. Maybe. I don't know how it would work, but What would stop people from taking this device with them to another city and using it, just like some Vonage customers do? Does anybody have any of my Sprint people, my good friends from Sprint, listening to the show? What would prevent someone from getting one of these units and then using it in an area? Is it is the something have to happen within the area network to allow this the system to be used, as the utilization? Or I would imagine it is, because there has to be POPs in place for this, and they probably do short hauls within the community to keep the speed up and keep the service good. So very, very cool. Those of you in Denver and Indy, if you're Sprint service, definitely check out the link. Hey, kind of a funny one. There's an article up talking about how an iPod Touch was, what happened was, is the guy owns a iPhone, and he's been syncing it with iTunes. He got a iPod Touch, plugged into the same computer, and apparently the iTunes thought that the iPod Touch was an iPhone. And something has happened, and it disabled the iPod somehow. And it looked like it transferred some firmware or something, or some software over onto it. What really looks like happened is that the software engineers probably cut and paste the code that was on the iPhone into the iPod Touch, and didn't remove some of the hooks that were put in there. So, you know, it makes sense. They reutilized the code, but come on, remove the iPhone hook so that the iPod Touch people don't get messed up. But a pretty good picture, and you'll get a laugh out of this anyway. Oh, also, it looks like that this iPod Touch thinks it has a camera as well. So this, you know, definitely iTunes is totally confused on this particular device, at least for this particular incident. Those of you that have used Google Reader, you will definitely, if you're subscribed to different websites, that reporting data is sent back to anytime you load or anytime Google Reader indexes the website. It leaves a little calling card in the log files saying, hey, you've got 32,565 subscribers that are reading your site through Google Reader. Well, now they made it available so that you don't have to really dig into the logs. You can go over to Google Webmaster Tools to actually get that number, and they actually show you the number of subscribers per feed that you've got added to Google Webmaster Tools. So kind of cool. We'll see what happens there. But you know what I am worried about here is it looks like that they're tying a lot of, they're starting to do some integration with FeedBurner. And I guess we're going to have to watch and see what happens there and how this integration gets done. But I think they could be, some of these Google Webmaster Tools could become some of the FeedBurner stuff at some point. I don't know what I think about that at this point. I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. But anyway, pretty cool little tool available via the Google Webmaster a tool section of Google. If you are a WordPress user, I mean a WordPress.com user, if you've got your blog over on WordPress.com, a fair warning, make sure you have your data backed up on a regular basis. Make sure that you've got all your templates saved, because in the terms of service at WordPress, if blogs are suspended or found to be in breach of the terms of service, they don't contact you first to ask that content be modified or removed. And when they do remove your blog, you cannot have the blog name back, and you cannot have the blog content back. This is bad. And this is a gal that was working with someone who had a blog suspended for some unknown reason, but literally hundreds and hundreds of blog posts have really disappeared. She did not have a backup of any of the data, and there was really nothing she could do. So this just goes to prove that you need to control what is yours. You know, where you have your media, where you have your blogs hosted, is largely dependent upon the goodwill of the site that's hosting it to make sure that nothing is lost. If they get a complaint about your site or if they feel you're violating the terms of service, always have a backup. And better yet, get your own domain name. You know, get a cheap shared hosting account over at GoDaddy. They don't cost hardly anything. And install WordPress, and that way you have full control all the time. And it's really not hard to do. It's really, really not. And they've got instant, you know, you can install the software through the interface. You don't even have to know how to install the software. It gets installed for you. And, you know, control your own destiny. Control your own content. All right, over at Robin Good at masternewmedia.org, he's got a review of a new online video interview recorder. It's called Slight Speed 6. Got a great review of this pretty cool little tool. And I am definitely going to be checking out Slight Speed's recording features. I don't know if this thing cost any money or not, but definitely very, very nice application. And, oh, it does cost $4.95 per month for the pro plan, but from what I'm seeing, it would be a great way to do live video interviews. So check that out. All right, New York Times. Boy, they finally figured it out. The New York Times is going to stop charging for access to part of its website effective Tuesday night. And Time Select is no more. It's going to go bye-bye. And they're going to essentially open all content from, let's see here, it says, in addition to opening the entire site to all readers, the Times will also make available its archive from 1987 to present without charge, as well as data from 1851 to 1922, and some of the data from 1923 to 1986 will be free. I don't know why that is, but they figured out that it's just better to go with an advertising model and have the site opened up. Good, good, good for the New York Times. Maybe they're finally starting to get it over there, and I won't feel so bad now linking to articles because I know it won't go behind a doggone firewall anymore. All right, Yahoo has purchased Zimbra. I'm not familiar with Zimbra, but I guess it's a pretty cool application. It does an email and has a collaboration software, but they purchased them for $350 million. So I'm assuming Zimbra is going to get incorporated into the Yahoo family somehow. This might be Yahoo's attempt to compete with Google and some of the things they're doing, and also with Microsoft and some of their live products. So we'll see what happens there. But $350 million for Zimbra is what Yahoo paid for that. At least that's what's being reported for that property. Last week, I got a question via email from a listener of the show. Asked me, Todd, do you leave your PCs turned on at night, or do you turn them off, or what do you do? In all honesty, because I sleep so few hours. I generally sleep 4 to 5 hours a night, really maximum, except on the weekends. I leave my machines on 24/7, but I do have them set in to go into, you know, they turn hard drives off, turn the screens off, go into a power save mode. They're still burning energy. And probably at some point I'll, you know, depending if my electricity bill goes crazy, I'll change my policy on this. But I generally leave the machine on. But they're saying that companies now are looking at the actual energy costs by leaving machines on. And they are using some new software applications out there to shut machines off, because they're figuring out that the average company can save $40 per PC annually, but simply by turning the system off at night. And they're, of course, using comparisons of, and they got some stats here to back this all up. But I think the important thing is, for those of you that do leave your machines on, is make sure you have the power settings set so that if you walk away from the machine for 15 minutes, that the hard drive spins down, and that, you know, you put the screens to sleep and it goes into a low energy state. Another thing you can do to save on energy, if you're concerned about it, is all your chargers, unplug them when they're not charging. That's a smart thing, because they continue to burn energy regardless if they've got something connected to them or not. You know, if you feel on the transformers, they're hot. So, you know, heat means energy burn. So make sure you unplug the transformers when not needed. OpenOffice 2.3 has been released, so that's on the street. Those of you that are OpenOffice users, you can check that out. And I'll be definitely upgrading the machines here. I don't know what Universal Studios was thinking here, but they've jumped the shark here. They have released some free downloads of music that they've made available via SpiralFrog.com. It's a free ad-supported download service, and it which launched today. But the music that's on there from Universal is coded in such a way that they cannot be loaded onto the iPod. So it appears that Universal is thumbing its nose at Apple and saying, hey, you know, we're going to make deals with people and we're going to do stuff and we're going to have our software going out. And SpiralFrog, I guess, is a Universal site. They basically said, you know, you can't load them on iTunes. Now, we'll see how long that lasts. because I'm sure someone's going to be working out there to figure out a way around this. But the site intends to have over 2 million tracks available within the next several months. And the site has been in beta tested, and it currently carries about 800,000 tracks and 3,500 music videos. And you can sign up for a free account to provide demographic information to gain access to the media. You must also use your account each month in order to keep it active, which is intended to prevent users from simply downloading and not returning to the site. Must be the media drops dead after a day, I would imagine, or after a month, I would imagine that's what happens there. Okay, let's see, I'll skip that one. That was more of a security issue for system admins. It's being announced that there's being some repairs done to Space Shuttle Discovery, which may delay its scheduled flight. They've got to do some work on the landing gear. They've got to fix a hydraulic seal, so we'll see what happens with that. But they haven't pushed the October 23rd launch yet. Oh, here's one. This is for those of you that do a lot of traveling, and if you travel with a lot of electronics like I do, be very, very careful that if you have improvised your electronics in any way, be prepared not to be able to check or board those electronics. It appears the TSA is looking for any type of electronics that have been modified. It doesn't matter if it's a homebrew change. It was specifically for what the story came through as is a guy that had modified a microcontroller programmer. And he had wired some stuff on it to be able to change resistance factors and so forth. And TSA said, nope, this has been modified. It's not, original equipment, so it can't fly. You can't fly. You're going to have to leave it behind. So be careful if you're out there. And this is the first I've heard about this. So if you have improvised electronic devices, don't fly with them or ship them ahead via normal shipping means. All right, very, very sad today for me. This really hit me hard. Boing Boing is reporting that Robert Jordan, the famous author, has died. And I am a big, big fan of this guy's his books. Ah, this is just terrible. It really, really is. He's got a series of books. I think they're up to book 11, I think, is what is up to. But the Wheel of Time series is not going to be finished. And I guess this is an illness that came on in the last year. And if any of you are Robert Jordan fans, gosh, what a shock. And he was only 58. And he had written the prequel, and it totally, totally bums me out. I mean, it bums me out in a big, big way. I don't know how the series is going to be finished. I don't know if he's talked to someone and told them how the series should be finished. This is just, if you're a science fiction fan and you've been following this, I've been following this book series for 10 years. And, the author's gone. So I don't know what's going to happen. Are you a Robert Jordan fan? If you are, wow. How's this hit you? It sucks. It really does. It really, really does. Okay, that's all I've got for content tonight. I've got a voicemail here. I'll go ahead and play, and then I've got some email comments. And hopefully we'll get you out of here a little earlier in the show this time tonight. As always, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. And here's the voicemail for the night.
Hello, Todd. This is Henry Campos. I just had a quick two comments on the 300 show. It was pretty interesting. And that was a pretty interesting intro that you played, you know, like one of the older ones. Where did you get that one? And also, a quick question, where did you get that new one that you have? And as far as that mic was concerned, that old one, I asked myself, where were you when you did that thing, that recording? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I asked myself when I heard it. It sounded like you were when, inside those little cells in the police station, you know what I'm saying, where they, you know, I don't know if you've gone into it, but it's kind of like a jail cell, but it
never been in one.
Small and has the middle bed and everything. You know, so just kind of, like I was saying, why is Todd in one of those little cells at a police station for? You know, so like, I was wondering why you were doing the recording in there. But in any event, that's what it sounded like. Also, could you tell me where to get the PDF version? Larry Skutkan mentioned on the Blind Cool Tech podcast that there's a PDF file of that book you did about podcasting. So if you could tell me at some point, you know, where to get it, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. That's it for now. Goodbye.
Aloha, and thanks for your call. First things first, the first audio was done by a guy that I hired. Actually, the audio that you probably heard on the first show was something I had created for some PodSafe music. And then the second one was that real radio voice. I hired a guy to do that. But our current intro is done by the audio folks over at the Audio Collective. You can go over and check that out at audiocollective.com. The first where some of the first recordings were was out of a hotel room in Waco, Texas, when I was doing some work in that area. And so far as the digital version of my book, you can get that at Amazon.com. Just go over there and put in Todd Cochrane, C-O-C-H-R-A-N-E, and you'll find the book. It's called Podcasting the Do-It-Yourself Guide. There is a digital version of it. It is 2 years. It's been available for 2 years. So some of the data, much of the creation and recording techniques are good, but some of the sites are probably a little dated now. But you can probably pick it up over there pretty inexpensively. So you can get the digital copy of it at Amazon. All right, let me go, and of course, thanks for the call. So let me go ahead and get into the email comments. Got an email from Robert. He says, "Hey, Todd, Cardiff is the capital of Wales. Congrats on reaching the 300 level. Also, thank you for serving your country for so long. I hope you'll go well. I hope all will go well in your new house, hunt, and transition to civilian life. Finally, I will be sending you something next week." Oh, thanks, Robert. Appreciate that. Got an email from Lena, and she says, "Hey, congrats on retirement. Perhaps now you can rest a bit. You'll rid yourself of that cough." Well, you know, in all honesty, Lena, there's not going to be too much rest for the weary, because I went over to Emory Riddle today, and I signed up for 3 more classes. So I still have the cough, but I'm going to be starting school in the middle of October again. So I'm going to be staying busy. But going on here, I just had a comment about the email regarding Mac versus PC. "I'm experienced to use both in my field of graphics/catalog design, so I feel I can be balanced. When I first started using the Mac, they had the end user so tied up, you had to have a certified Mac tech to even load your software. The price of the software was ridiculous, and you needed to take out a loan if you needed tech support. That is, if you could find someone certified to help you. When I bought my first PC, I realized for the most part, the Mac is for those who are limited in their knowledge of computers. Despite what diehard Mac users say, I've yet to find anything a Mac can do that a PC can't do just as well, and there's no comparing the software available for PCs as compared to Mac." I agree with that wholeheartedly. "As far as ease of use, sure, if you don't know much about your computer, you shouldn't be making adjustments to it. A Mac is perfect. The less you can access, the less you can mess up. In conclusion, I've actually been turned down for position because of my love for the PC. While I can use a Mac, I prefer the PC. It's time for the Mac user to realize they're not superior in using a Mac, just poor. And yes, printing companies are fully capable of receiving and printing files created on a PC. Mac users, take your head out of the sand. There, I feel better. Thanks for sending that in, Lena. And you know what? I guess the simple fact of the matter is a computer is a computer is a computer is a computer. And still, today, I find myself doing 90% of the stuff on my PC. And I primarily, to be honest with you, I primarily use my Mac to do video editing. And, you know, I unlocked the iPhone on it. So I guess, you know, that helped. But, you know, I think you're right. And I'm sure we're going to get some pushback on this. But you do have to admit, though, that they've done some pretty cool things. And being able to run Windows on the Mac. That is a very, very cool feature. You have the best of both worlds. And I know my three-year-old, I think he's definitely going to be a Mac fan. He spends more time on it than on the PC for sure. I got an email from Mike. He says, on the last show, someone was looking for streaming. He says, what about Ustream? From what I've seen, you could just stream the audio from there. Well, that is true. You could. You absolutely could just stream the audio from there, and it would be free, and it would scale. The video would be up, but actually, you can turn the video off. Good idea, Mike. Very, very good idea, because that way it's free. You don't have to pay for the infrastructure. Yep, good one. Got an email from Steven. Hey, Todd. Good day from Canberra, Australia. Really look forward to your shows each week. Do you notice how when you say Australia, you automatically want to take on the Australian accent? I don't know what it is. Do you know that when you consider all cool gear you have set up for your rig, it doesn't add up to a hill of beans if you're sick? So, mate, listen to your dear significant other and get your cough sorted out. As a geeky chiropractor, I'm depending on you to keep me informed on all things tech. If your router was on the blink, would you go to get it seen to? Excuse me, would you get it seen? Yes. So if the presenter is on the blink, then you have to get a health professional of your choice and get a presenter fixed up. Make time, not excuses. Hope I'm not too pushy here. Regards, Steven. Steven, thanks for the comments. I appreciate it. And I nudged myself into seeing the doc. So, but I do appreciate you being worried about me. And you're not the only one that has sent me emails scolding me. And but thanks for the follow up and appreciate it, and hopefully I get this thing behind me, because you guys have heard it down there. It's been tickling my throat tonight. All right, folks. Wow, 1 hour and 8 minutes. We're wrapped up. We're done. As always, send your comments to geeknews@gmail.com. Geeknews@gmail.com. Call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Maybe a show on Friday, maybe. No promises, or maybe a short one on Thursday late. Definitely we'll be back with you for a full-blown show on Tuesday. But it's going to be kind of a busy couple of weeks with the expo going on. Definitely keep you informed. Keep an eye on the blog. I'll keep you updated. And apologize if I don't get one out, but this is an event that I absolutely, unequivocally have to go to. But I will try to get something short out for you, if nothing else, on Thursday. So that's it. Y'all take care. Aloha until next time.